Hi, I'm Adam Pendlebury.
I am Barry Worthington.
I'm Charlie Keegan.
And I am Paul Thorpe.
And this is the Progress of the Unity podcast. Our first league win of 2024. Wigan Athletic 1, Reading 0. Happy with that?
Yeah, very happy. Yet to taste a defeat in the league this year.
I thought it was going to be a bit of a tricky tie, and I think it proved that case anyway, especially the second half when it came back at us. But our first half performance, slightly better finishing. I'm not going to be too critical, but slightly better finishing, and we could have been out of sight.
I think so. Because so many on target, was it 7 on target we had or something? Probably the most of our season so far. And Godot's attempt, it was a half chance, the one, but he forced Button into a low save. Telavasgard's cushioned header back to the keeper, which, to be fair, either side of the keeper, that's probably going in. It was just unfortunate it was straight at him. But Asgard was very impressive yesterday. And I think it's those little pockets of space where he's starting to work into. Perhaps Jordan Jones and Josh McGinnis just pulling away the attackers is allowing Asgard a little bit more of space, but he's one of his best goals and assists season so far for Latics now after that one. And I think he's really maturing his game. And yeah, he was very impressive for us yesterday.
I think he's probably better when Humphries isn't playing, I think, because I think Humphries sometimes goes into his space, particularly earlier in the season when Humphries, his move was to always go inside, wasn't it, really? So sometimes you need to know, you have your combinations that can play better together. I think Asgard benefits from having a number nine playing in there, albeit I think Josh McGinnis only touched the ball, didn't he, about six times yesterday or something like that.
I read as well that, well, we obviously saw, but Reading were without Nelson Abbey. I'm pretty sure I saw some Reading fans say that he's practically there. Charlie Hughes, very big centre back, somebody that's very exciting, and he's off to Olympiacos. So Reading without him. I don't know, the news kind of came out midweek this week, and I don't think they've played a lot of games without Nelson Abbey. So it's like if we lost Charlie Hughes, your defensive line, they're going to have to do new roles that they're not quite used to because you've got somebody like that. So I think losing a player like Abbey was just a bit of a shock to Reading. And I think that you could kind of tell that when they were playing, they just lost a little bit of an edge that they maybe had before.
I think we've got to talk about the goal. 32 minutes in, just before the goal, Matt Smith again, played in Jordan Jones. God, what a player he is, isn't he? Always looking to be, so positive when he's on the ball. Fabulous player. But that goal, Chambers, that looking for it.
Jordan Jones had that fella on toast before their fullback. He'd had him a couple of times. He got clattered by him. I tell you what, I did notice about Matt Smith, and I don't know whether this is everybody else has seen this, and I'm last to the party. The amount of times that he passed the ball, you know, across that back four and the back of the midfield to a player with space in front of him to move into. I'm going to keep an eye on that because I think it's definitely a feature that you love to see. And it's not one I've noticed before, but that doesn't mean he's not been doing it. It might just have been quietly going under the radar.
I was agreeing with you, Paul, there. But the other one I noticed, it's like the ping. That little ping that you hear almost, and Chambers is the same. It always seems like it's actually in the running path. It doesn't affect their stride. And I think there was a few games, particularly around the Christmas, they didn't believe in the passing. And even though it might have gone to the man, they'd have to step back. It wasn't crisp.
A little bit of the build-up there. Lovely back heel from Chambers that took out four players, as Charlie told us all before we started recording, and I've just nicked it. Trademark. I mean, Tello himself has tweeted this, TM, trademark finish from our Norwegian prince. Absolute brilliant.
Yeah. There's been a few, aren't there? I mean, the one against Blackburn stands out. Give him a bit of space there, and he copies the gaffer, doesn't he, again, that United game. Top corner, bend it round the keeper. Thank you very much. That Chambers flick was lovely, wasn't it? It took some out. I would have said two, but Charlie said four. But yeah, we'll go with four.
Probably was two, to be fair. I just like saying four because it sounds a little bit better. But I think Chambers is a player that you can very, very clearly tell he is from a top academy like Liverpool, just because of just the little qualities he has. And sometimes when you see a player trying to operate in a really tight space, sometimes he can use the body a little bit too much. And Luke Chambers, he's just blocked the guy, little flick, and then we're away. And sometimes little players can overthink it, but you can tell you can see why Klopp has put so much trust in a player like Luke Chambers. And I think this loan's going to be perfect for him. I say a lot that Premier League youngsters who are starting to break into the Premier League should always go on loan to lower league sides, just to be able to get a full season or even half a season under the belt, because I think it does help them. And Chambers is going to be some player by the end of the season if he just gets this good run going.
I was very impressed as well with his post-match interview. He understands the game well. Good speaker, but he's also very humble. You know, he said, all the players have made me feel welcome, but everybody. And he was acknowledging cleaners and catering staff and everything like that as well. So, you know, I think it's nice to hear someone who's so young, you know, actually thinking beyond just his 11 teammates, or his 10 teammates, I would be cheating.
I'll tell you what else, Adam, he was doing in that. He was so passionate about Wigan Athletic. He's talking about his club, our team, and that's so good and refreshing to hear. He's got me. I'm hooked on another loan player. What I'm thinking now, you know, he's only just turned 19. He needs another season at League One level. Let's get him signed up in summer for next season as well.
Just always looks like he's very composed. But he's never going to be Reece James' standard, obviously, but his composure at that age is similar to Reece James.
It's confidence, I think. And I even think Tom Pearce, defensively, when he's confident, can do really well. It's just sometimes Tom Pearce gets inside his own head a little bit, and I know we've seen that with Lang a couple of times a season, but I think that's one of Pearce's biggest downfalls, is just not believing in himself much. But Chambers, he won what? The England Under-19 World Championships, or the Euros, something like that. He's playing in England Under-20s. He's been in the Europa League with Liverpool. He's been playing in the Premier League on occasion. So I think, yeah, Chambers, full of confidence, and you can definitely see when he plays.
Run through the team for yesterday, which Tittle, Clare, Hughes, Chambers, then with Sessegnon, Adiko, Matty Smith and Jones, Godot, Asgard and McGuinness. Just having one central defender. I still don't class Sean Clare as a defender. I think he's more like an attacking, a wing-back type player, or even a winger. And there were times when Luke Chambers was up the field as well yesterday. What do we make of it? I mean, I'm a big fan of Morrison's, so I like to see Morrison play as well.
It was a surprise when you're looking through the squad and you're looking at where your defenders are, out-and-out defenders. And you can't really say Charlie Hughes is a conservative defender. You know, a couple of times yesterday, he was striding out with it, wasn't he? I think one thing that is kind of noticeable to me is that I think, so particularly when Shaw came on, could sit a bit more, you know, and Adiko sat a bit more then. And I think early on in the game, Matt Smith was almost a bit like Morsi used to do sometimes, just sort of drop in as that extra defensive line if the others go forward. So I think you can see some method in it, but I think you alluded to it earlier. I'm going to nick your points, Barry, because I don't think we'll play that on Tuesday with the Sam Vaux up front.
Yeah, I'm going to keep my mouth shut pre-recording future, my little gems. Yeah, I can't see that. Yeah, it was a different challenge on Tuesday.
Strange, because Hughes and Morrison have built up a partnership, haven't they? It's strange to not see them playing together.
About 10 minutes in, I was scanning the pitch, because even though I'd read the team out in the supporters club, I hadn't really taken too much notice. And I was looking around the pitch thinking, where's Morrison? Where is he? And I couldn't find him, and I thought, God, he sat up bench. And they're just like, wow, what's going on here?
Maybe there's an element of, if we'd have gone with Chambers, Hughes and Morrison, it was a 19-year-old, a 20-year-old and a 20-year-old against a Reading side that are very good. So maybe they put Sean Clare in there just to be a little bit more experienced. But I think I've said it a few times. Hey, Morrison is my player this season so far. I think he's the best on the ball, the best defender with the most ability. I would put him ahead of Charlie Hughes, to be honest. But I think, I just think maybe an age has had a bit of a factor in it and just needed Sean Clare. But Sean Clare plays a Harry McKee star role, doesn't he? You blink and he's gone. He's up the pitch somewhere.
Talking to Matt Smith, that cheeky little lob he did in the second half. If that had gone in, I mean, he'd been rerunning that for years to come, wouldn't they? But I did think Button did a good save. And if it had been a millimetre shorter, he wouldn't have got that either, would he? It was right in the postage stamp.
He did a smart save getting down to his right, didn't he, as well?
Yeah, that was from Morrison. Morrison's header.
Quick thinking, good vision, isn't it? Again, you know, it's an option that he spots and he's got the technique to carry off. I mean, you think of players who've done it just off the top. Obviously, we've got Figueroa, but you then off the top of your head, you think of other, like Rooney's done it, Beckham's done it. I mean, obviously, very good technical players, very tactically aware players.
The stats for the game, possession 44% to the Latics, Attempts, we had 8, Reading 11, but we hit the target 7 times, which is a bit of an improvement on recent games. Corners, 1-3 in Reading's favour. We committed 10 fouls, Reading 17. We picked up 2 yellow cards, Stephen Sessegnon and Stevie Humphries, and Reading picked up 1 yellow card. Attendance, 9,103, with just over 600 travelling up from down south. The referee was Tom Reeves. Man of the match, as voted for by our listeners on both Facebook and Twitter, Latics number 14, Jordan Jones. What a fantastic season he's having. I mean, at the start of the season, we were all scratching our heads thinking, is he going to stay? Is he going to go? I just think he's had a marvellous season this season. Absolutely superb. Is it down to Maloney?
He's fit as well, isn't he? So he's in the remainder of the game, you know, the last dying minutes, running up and down and making tackles. And just a quick mention as well, I love when McManaman comes on as well. You know, he's prepared to put his body on the line, isn't he? He's a great sub to have, someone to bring on in that latter stage of the game, because you know he's not going to pull out of any tackle, is he, ever. He can just do things that other players can't, that take the pressure off. But he is, for me, an impact sub rather than a starter. You know, there are the key roles in games, aren't there? Your substitutes, now you can make 5 of them. They are very key.
The subs, I'll mention them. Humphries for Godot on 38 minutes. I think he got a bit of a dead leg, Marshall Godot, so hopefully he'll be fit for Tuesday. Sean Maloney said there's every possibility he will be. Morrison for McGuinness on 60 minutes. McManaman and Shaw came on for Asgard and Smith on 77. And to be honest with you, I was following Matt Smith round with my eyes, and I thought he could have done with going off 10 minutes early because he was absolutely shattered. Obviously, he's been out a long time, playing a lot of games in a short period. I know they came on strong in the second half and we sat back a little bit, but I think for me, tiredness played a big part in that.
See, I don't think they came on that strong. I know there was a lot of criticism, particularly around me, of get out, get out. And I know Tickle made a couple of smart saves, but I thought we had them pretty much contained. You know, they weren't cutting us open every two minutes. They were doing a lot of passing sideways at the back.
Anyway, we won 1-0, picked up 3 points, and we're 13th in the table, our highest position this season. Right, we'll move on. A bit of club news coming. The Latics have made an announcement this past week regarding the fans fund that's been running since the summer of 2021. The meeting held on the 30th of January. The Old Belief Fund, which was set up and introduced by former CEO Mal Branigan, was scrapped earlier this month, and it appears that the new owners are rebranding and relaunching the scheme under the branding of the Future Fund. This sounds like an indication that it will feed directly into the academy. It's been said many times, and to be honest with you, the future of the club is the academy, so not a bad thing if it is. The meeting, advertised as a consultation, I've been to consultation meetings previously, and they've not been meetings, they've been briefings, and you get told stuff. So I have possibly an inkling that it might be that. It is by invitation only, and will include a couple of members of each of what the club terms fans groups and some randomly selected Believe fans fund members. I've no idea what the ratio at the various fan groups are with regards to being fans fund members, but I'd hope that everyone at the meeting has indeed at some point been a fans fund member. And I don't see the point of getting people along who's not been part of the scheme. There's a lot of people want to ask a lot of questions, especially the way it's been done over the past year. We've had the change of ownership, and I've asked questions about it. I know a lot of people have asked questions, and we've had no answers. So I'd sooner be there myself asking the questions than somebody who's probably not interested in it asking it. I've got a few questions I want answering, and I want some assurances going forward. I don't know how you lot feel about that.
Bizarrely came out of it, just ironically is probably the better word to use, about a week before the announcement, because I was getting to the point now thinking, well, there's nothing really happening here with this, so I decided to take it out. I know you, Paul, you tried to cancel it, didn't you? And then you had some issues cancelling it, I think, at some banking issue or something.
It cancelled it and then reinstated it before it was next due.
It just didn't feel right to me being in that fund anymore. You know, I was in it through, you know, the ownership uncertainty over the summer, but nothing was happening. There was nothing really coming from the club. And then we've got this statement that comes out. And I guess the other thing that's important in there, and even though it's not the main aim of the agenda, I think it is important to ask questions about ticketing systems as well, you know, because that was almost buried, wasn't it? I think that was probably something from a communication perspective that was deserving of a separate announcement and not being together with the other announcement, I think. So I think that's a bit of criticism there from our media and comms department.
I mean, there was talk of them being linked to each other, weren't there? The Belief Fund and the ticketing company, they had links, which we probably can't go too deep into here in case somebody hears and reports us to the liable police.
That's me.
There is quite a few people who belong to fan groups who are dead set against the Belief Fans Fund from the off. It just doesn't, you know, people have different opinions. And I've seen lots of comments online already about this relaunch. If people don't like it, they don't like it. But don't tell other people. You know, I'll not tell you, you have to put your money in. So don't tell me I've not to put my money in. That's what I said. But I'd need some assurances to join this again, some real assurances. Let's move on to talk about the football. Rearranged game on Tuesday, Wickham are in town. I've spoken with George from the Wickham Way podcast this morning. Let's have a listen how that went. Back at the DW Stadium on Tuesday when Wickham Wanderers are in town. I'm joined by George from the Wickham Way podcast.
Hi, Barry. Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm more than happy to come and talk about Wickham, which is always a pleasure.
Current form, one defeat in the last six games, unbeaten in four, just a point behind us. Are you playing at the moment?
It's a tricky one to get your head around, really, because we've won one game in 16, 17 or something ridiculous, but we've only lost one in the last eight or nine. Plenty of draws in there. It's a case of when we go ahead, we can't keep a lead. And it's often silly mistakes in the very last minute that's costing us. I think we've had three or four in the last seven games where we've thrown the lead away in the dying moments. And when we go behind, we just never really look like we're going to turn the game around completely. We sort of managed to get the equaliser like we did at Burton a few weeks ago. But from there, you know, we had a few chances, but nothing really major. There's no way to put a positive spin on our form. One win in 17 is dreadful, whichever way you look at it. But actually, I don't think it's all doom and gloom when you look at the amount of games we're losing. It's not very many at all. You know, we're not conceding many goals, but the problem then is if you don't score many, you're not going to pick up too many points.
Yeah, it sounds like you play a very tight game. Is this the tactics of your manager? You all come to him now, Matt Bloomfield, a bit of a Wickham legend, one club man in his playing career. He went to Colchester, had a few months there, and then he did quite well, and you brought him in to replace Gareth Ainsworth. Can you tell us a little bit about Matt, please?
His nickname, Mr. Wickham, for a reason. Most of his playing career was here. I think he had one appearance for Ipswich before coming to Wickham on loan, and then he never left the building. We couldn't get rid of him. And I guess it's quite fitting with his managerial career that he went to Colchester for a few, over 6 months to get a bit of experience there. And like you say, Colchester, when he went in there, were really struggling, actually. And sort of Matt went in, had a really good January window, steadied the ship. And I think when Ainsworth left, as much as it was poor timing on his half, I think bringing in Bloomfield was the right thing to do to keep, I guess, the culture around the place going. You know, Ainsworth had worked really hard for a number of years to really build up a sense of community and a sense of involvement around the club. And I think that might have been at risk if we'd put in an exterior appointment. So I think going and getting Matt Bloomfield, you know, probably paying a little bit more compensation to get him in, I think that will prove to be a good thing in the long run, let's say, rather than taking a risk on somebody else. A few question marks in recent weeks over whether he's the right man going forward. But until the form gets really quite dire, I don't think there's too much to make a fuss about.
He's coming. He's not shaking the place up by any means, has he? Is he just sticking to the formula that's been there for the past few years?
It's a tricky one. He is sort of trying to implement his own ideas. You mentioned there we're playing like a tight game of football. Not really, you know, we are creating chances and we're letting the opposition create chances. It's just we can't finish and our goalkeeper is really quite good. So it's a tricky one to get your head around because the games are really quite enjoyable, but there's just not many goals going in at either end. You know, the principles are there, really. It's a strong defensive unit full of big, muscular guys. And then we're still utilising Sam Vokes up top, like Ainsworth would have done with a big, strong target man. So the main foundation and principles are still there. I guess with his own little twist, I think the ball is on the deck a little bit more, not too much more. If you look at the numbers and the stats, the possession numbers are way higher than it would have been under Ainsworth. But actually, the fundamentals are still in place from what Ainsworth was trying to do.
You mentioned Sam Vaux, and looking at your players, there's three that stand out to me. Sam Vaux, obviously. Gareth McCleary seems to have been there for the past 50 years, even though he's not, obviously not been. And Luke Leahy, who I've admired as definitely as a League One player at his various clubs. Good signings. Are they your three main guys, and who else should we be looking out for?
Definitely two of them. I think definitely Sam Vaux and Luke Leahy, you're right to point out. I don't think Gareth McCleary has sort of had the effect that he would have had last season or he would have wanted to have. The bloke is aging like a fine wine. He keeps getting better and better with age, I think, definitely at Wickham. But I think his end output has maybe dwindled a little bit this season. But on the ball, you couldn't tell that he's 37 years of age. You know, he'll still run at a fullback, a young fullback. He'll go and take him on. He's a joy to watch still. And you mentioned Sam Vaux. You know, he's in red hot form at the minute. And, you know, for someone like Sam Vaux, where he's played at the highest level, he's played in the Premier League, he's played at the Euro competitions, you know, his movement in the box against some of the more experienced defences is second to none. And he's always going to get chances. Also, Luke Lee, who he brought in the summer, don't think we've seen the best of him just yet. I think he's been playing sort of either centre back or left back. And I think we brought him in mainly as a rotational option for playing a number of positions. But actually, you almost feel like he's being wasted as a left back. You know, he's not blessed with tons of pace. And as much as he's got a fantastic set piece delivery, you almost want him in the middle controlling the game. I guess a few other names I'll throw in there are Freddie Potts on loan from West Ham. I think he's really come in and hit the ground running. I think next year, if West Ham given a chance, we'll get minutes in the Premier League and plenty of them. And obviously, it's important to mention the goalkeeper, Max Strijcik. He had a little rocky run of form sort of going through October and November, but he seems to have picked himself up again. And he's picking us up points more often than not.
Just want to mention something to you about Tuesday night. You're up here in Wigan, and it's a place you've never won a game of football. In fact, the last time you beat us was back in 2001. So with all that in mind, George, can you give us a score prediction, please, for Tuesday?
I'm going to start by saying I've booked half the day off work to make the trip up there, so I might have to rethink that one now. I think it'll be cagey. I think Wickham will go up there not wanting to lose more than wanting to grab the win. Our form isn't great, but I think confidence is sort of on the up, if that makes sense. We're not playing bad football. You know, I'll go up there and take a point all day long. So I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
Thank you very much for joining us, George. Best of luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
Yeah, I almost forgot that Wickham were in the league because it's been so long since we've actually played them. And I think we've played, five teams twice and still haven't played Wickham yet. And obviously just the rescheduling issues. But after listening to George and just looking at the sort of stats and watching a few highlights of the game, they just remind me of a Cheltenham-style team where they've got a few players with individual quality, but just across the field, they're just struggling a little bit. And I think the 90% of their goals have come from inside the box, more poachers' efforts. They're just trying to whip the balls in no matter what. But then they're conceding a lot as well, especially in the penalty area. Nothing really spectacular against them. It's just get the ball in the box and get it in the goal. But there's been a lot of tight games. And I think in the league, you've got to go back to October when Bolton beat them 4-2. And I think that's the first scoreline that's been more than a one-goal difference, just because it's either been nil-nils or one-nils or 1-1s, 3-2s. It's been quite close in a lot of the games. And I think Latics are going to have to be quite smart, because we've had it a couple of times this season where we've played Lincoln or Cheltenham and it's sort of been a who blinks first. And we've got to make sure that they blink first and try and get a goal ahead. And a goal like Asgard's, if you can do that again, that's going to be huge for them. But one defeat in the last six, unbeaten in four, just 1 point behind Latics. They're doing all right. I just think that Matt Bloomfield's style of play is a little bit stagnant, and I don't know how much that's going to be sustainable for them. I think that maybe he's going to be the next to go, a bit like a Matt Taylor. But in terms of attacking players, Luke Leahy, I think he's one of the best players in the league. I'm going to put him up there. 7 goals and 6 assists, but it's more his set pieces. He's very good. He's got 2 free kick assists, 1 from a corner, 1 free kick goal, 4 penalty goals, 1 from outside the box as well that he can score. Very talented. I can't remember the clubs he's been at before. Maybe Bristol Rovers is in there, but Wickham did very well to get him. And when you put him alongside a Sam Vaux, who's got 4 goals and 1 assist this season, you can see why they're doing all right at being poachers, because that's that kind of the way they play. But we've scored more, we've conceded less, we've got more clean sheets. So I'm hoping that we can try and stick a few past them and get 2 wins out of 2.
The waveform is almost as identical to ours. They've won three, drawn five, and lost five. They've got 14 points, just like we have.
Yeah, the home and away form is pretty much exactly the same, and I think that's just the way they play.
Right, well, have a ref watch. The referee on Tuesday night will be Gateshead-based official Adam Herzeg. He was promoted to the national list for the 22-23 season. He's been in charge of just one Latics game in the past, and that was earlier this season, back in September, and it was our 2-1 win over Cambridge United at the DW Stadium. His card watch for the season, Adam Herzeg has taken charge of 21 games this season. He's issued 59 yellows, one red, and he's awarded 5 penalty kicks. And that's Adam Herzeg, who will referee the visit to Wickham to the DW on Tuesday.
So previous against Wickham Wanderers, we've met them 18 times down the years. I think they only joined the Football League or were promoted to the Football League in the early 90s. We've won 11, lost only 2, drawn 5. First met in the 93-94 season, when Martin O'Neill took Wickham to promotion in their first season in the Football League. While struggling, Latics got a point at Springfield Park, 1-1, in our first ever meeting. That would have been under Kenny Swain. And we won the return down at Adams Park, 1-0. And I looked at that, it was Andy Lyon. We've never lost to Wickham in Wigan, and Wickham haven't beaten the Latics since September 2001. Previous visit, as we well know, was the 1-1 draw in the second game back after COVID during our title-winning season. Callum Lang scored a goal in a great performance, but we were robbed in the last minute with an equaliser. I was going to say Sam Vaux, but it might not be. But I know that it was pumped into the box, and big Akin Fenway caused us all kinds of trouble. Back to Barry for the predictions.
George has gone for a 1-1. Out of these three games, Reading, Wickham and Stevenage, I thought we'd pick up 7 points. I think we're going to get the second win of that run on Tuesday. So I'm going to go for a 2-0 Latics win.
I think even though Charlie said that Wickham are 1 point behind us, they're not really 9 points behind us. I think it's going to be similar to Reading. 1-0, I'll go with again, because we've a habit of putting the same scoreline two games running this season. So I'll go 1-0.
If Godot's not fit enough, I'd put Callum Lang if he is fit enough, because the last two times we've played him, I think Lang scored three of our four goals against them. So maybe Callum Lang can do something. But we've just got to be smart defensively. We can definitely have the dangers, especially when they try and whip it in. So I wouldn't be surprised if we do the back three with wing-backs again, just to try and stop the crosses and try and control the game a little bit more. But got to take our chances. I'm going to say 3-1 to Wigan.
I think it's going to be a tight game. I don't think it's going to be a classic, to be honest, for a cold Tuesday night in Wigan. Battle of the W's. I think I'll probably go with Paul. Just nick it. If we can just nick it 1-0, the pitch isn't going to be great. It's just going to be one of them horrible cold nights. You know, you need to take a flask of coffee or Bovril or whatever you want to take and just get through it, get our 3 points, and then move on to a Caribbean Saturday the following week against Stevenage. 1-0.
Quick run through Tuesday's fixtures. There's quite a few games. Bolton v Cheltenham, which unfortunately is the rearranged fixture following that tragic incident that occurs. Bristol Rovers, the Exeter, Charlton, Northampton, Huddersfield play Barnsley, Reading and Derby, and obviously we play Wickham. We'll be back on Wednesday with all the reaction to the Wickham game and a look ahead to Stevenage and Steve Evans in town on Saturday. So until Wednesday, it's up the ticks. Come on.
Up the ticks.
Come on.